America was born on July 4th, 1776, when the founders accepted by voice vote to adopt the final wording of our Declaration of Independence, which was a statement of independence from Great Britain, and at the same time a declaration of dependence upon Almighty God, whom they acknowledged as the source of those rights, including the first right they listed, which is the right to life. But abortion undermines that most basic right, the right to life. Today, America is like a checkerboard when it comes to the issue of abortion. One state favors life. Another state is heavily in favor of abortion rights. Eric Scheidler is the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League. He's one of the most well-informed Americans on the whole battle over life today. He joins us for an abortion slash pro-life update. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Eric, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be with you. You know, and at this time of flux with so many moving parts, it's important that pro-life people remain, you know, vigilant and well-informed of what's going on.
Well, there's a couple of different headlines that I want to just ask you about and let you wax eloquent on this. Okay, here's one. And by the way, I must source lifenews.com, give them the credit because that's where this is coming from. Poll shows majority of Americans support overturning Roe v. Wade. Comment on that. Here we are a year after Roe. What has happened since?
Yeah, that's a really incredible result a year after Roe v. Wade was overturned. You know, we were told before that ruling came that Americans wildly support Roe v. Wade. And when the ruling came down, we were told that it was against the will of the people. But we in the pro-life movement have always known that though people would say they support Roe v. Wade, when you'd ask them about the kinds of abortions they're comfortable and uncomfortable with, you'd find out that late-term abortion, sex selection abortion, aborting disabled children like Down syndrome babies, abortion for the purposes of birth control, multiple abortions, late-term abortions. There's so many different abortions that were allowed under Roe. You know, even some of the limits we were able to achieve that had vast support, it took decades to get those limits on abortion past the Supreme Court. So, in fact, Americans were not as happy with Roe v. Wade as they thought they were. They just didn't really understand. Roe v. Wade for them was more of a catch-all phrase for, you know, limited abortion when things are really tough, and they didn't really think a whole lot about it. Well, here we are a year after Dobbs, and it seems like maybe Americans are finally realizing that Roe v. Wade was never that great of a policy, and they're now saying that they support it. Especially interesting to me was that support for the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade and allowed states to enact abortion restrictions is much higher among minorities, especially Black Americans, than it is amongst white Americans. So that really pushes back against some of the false narratives that that minorities really are all about abortion. We know that's not true. They get more abortions disproportionately to the rest, in terms of the white population, which tells us that many, many, many of those abortions are unwanted. This should be a scandal that America's minority communities, especially Black Americans, are being pushed into abortions that they don't want, that they're morally opposed to, and that they're going to come to regret.
Isn't that amazing? How about a comment on the unprecedented phenomenon we saw last year where there were protests outside the homes of Supreme Court justices to try and, you know, change their vote, which is, I understand it, that's illegal, and yet our Justice Department did nothing about it. And I don't even know if any of these protests still go on. I don't know, but your comment on that.
Well, we're seeing a tremendous amount of pressure from many different directions on the Supreme Court, not only the actions of some crazy pro-abortion activists who have gone out and, you know, staked out protests at justices' homes. It was the man who was trying to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh, who was arrested by police last year. But there's also been all this propaganda against certain justices. We've seen some, you know, trumped up supposed scandals, you know, involving Samuel Alito and Justice Thomas. The most recent one from ProPublica is going after Sam Alito for a boat ride he took about 15 or 20 years ago with a rich guy. And that's it. I mean, this is supposed to be some sort of big blockbuster. The left is doubling down on trying to tear down people's belief in the Supreme Court. that institution, they're willing to burn to the ground in pursuit of abortion rights. This just shows how extreme they are. They're willing to destroy foundational institutions of the American Republic in the name of abortion on demand.
And that's very well put. Here's another headline, and it fits with this. Democrats renew calls to pack Supreme Court with pro-abortion extremists. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm reading from lifenews.com headlines.
Yeah, the court packing, the, you know, trumped up.
What does that mean for those not familiar with that term, court packing? Explain what that means, please.
Right. The idea of court packing is that you expand the size of the Supreme Court in order to add justices and get the results you want. The first time that this was proposed was during the administration of Franklin Roosevelt. Some of the programs that he put into place early in his presidency to deal with the Depression were struck down by the Supreme Court. You know, he was throwing everything at the wall, and the Supreme Court said he'd gone too far in some cases, and he threatened to add justices to the court to get the results he wanted. A couple of results came from that. One was there was tremendous pushback, and he ultimately backed down from that plan. But many people believe that the threat actually did influence the Supreme Court to be more open to some of the policies that his administration was pushing. So that was the story way back then. Now they're trying the same tactic. They want to add justices to the Supreme Court in order to tip the balance to a more liberal direction. This would be disastrous for our country, because then the next Republican president would do the same, eventually wind up with, you know, 50 Supreme Court justices of different from across the spectrum of the parties, and it just becomes unworkable. So, you know, this is hopefully only a tactic that they're talking about. We know originally President Biden was very much opposed to it when he was running for president. I would be surprised if he would get on board with this, but you know, we've seen that he has responded again and again and again when he's been kind of dragged to the left, dragged in more and more of a liberal direction. So we have to continue to voice our opposition to this, especially reaching out to our senators and letting them know we oppose any expansion of the Supreme Court.
Okay, here's another issue to deal with related to abortion in this pro-life update. Study shows maternal mortality spike after almost 50 years of legalized abortion. Does that mean more mothers have been dying? What does this mean?
Well, it's hard to – the infant mortality figures are really controversial. Sometimes this data is very falsely used by advocates for abortion to claim – that abortion is actually safer than childbirth, which is a bizarre claim. It's based on the fact that if a woman dies within a year after giving birth, it will be counted as a maternal mortality. Even if she dies after getting an abortion, that might be considered, depending on how they code it, to be a maternal mortality. If she gets into a car crash 6 months after giving birth, that could be marked as maternal mortality. So it's kind of a nonsense statistic the way that it's recorded in the United States. Nevertheless, we do have some evidence to suggest that outcomes worsened for American mothers in the first couple decades of the 21st century. We're seeing an increase in maternal mortality. That means mothers dying after giving birth, which suggests you know, that our headlong drive into more and more abortion, the expansion of abortion in so many states, has actually been really harmful for women. We know, for example, that in Ireland, before they legalized abortion, they had the highest outcomes, the best outcomes in all of Europe for mothers and babies. And right now, one of the safest countries for a mother and an unborn child to be is Poland. Poland has pretty strict limits on abortion, and they have some of the best outcomes for moms and babies. So there does seem to be a connection between abortion policy and harms to women.
Well, you've been in the pro-life fight for years and years, decades, really. What are your comments in terms of just what you've seen anecdotally, you know, when it comes to like women that chose abortion and then they feel bad and it kind of put them on a bad trajectory, you know, unless they found true forgiveness and healing through Christ or something? In some cases, there's even suicide, right?
The abortion lobby has been for some years now pushing this campaign called Shout Your Abortion. They're encouraging women to be proud of their abortions, to wear T-shirts that say this is what a woman who has an abortion looks like, to go on social media and do this. And people hear about this. They hear famous actresses like Busy Phillips and others talking about how abortion helped them in their careers. And, you know, we see a lot of this type of talk. But the reality for the vast majority of women is that abortion is something that they don't want to talk about. They don't want to think about. And for many of them, it takes years before they really reckon with what happened. You know, in the immediate aftermath of in their mind solving the problem, becoming kind of unpregnant by getting an abortion, they will feel relief. But then years later, that fades away, and they start to get triggered by, you know, the sound of a vacuum cleaner that reminds them of the suction aspiration machine that took their child's life. Or when they finally have a baby and that they have difficulty bonding with that child. Or maybe the anniversary of the abortion comes around and it's a landmark, like 12 years later that my child would have been thinking about high school now. And these moments can bring back what happened and cause a tremendous amount of sorrow. I mean, abortion is a traumatic experience for a woman. We know that more than half of abortions are unwanted. So women are going and getting abortions they know they don't want. They often believe that it's wrong, but they also feel pressured by, you know, sometimes in their minds, insurmountable pressure by bosses, boyfriends, coworkers, you know, to get that abortion. And then they're left to have to pick up the pieces themselves later. Fortunately, the pro-life movement is there to provide them support, to let them know that they're forgiven. We have both religious and more secular types of programs that help women to deal with the guilt and shame of abortion. And we've only gotten better and upped our game more and more over the years. But now that abortion has been, you know, limited in some states, that the law is a teacher. And I think we're going to see more and more women seeking, you know, this type of help. And we are seeing attitudes towards abortion begin to shift in those states. The fact that it's the simple fact that abortion is illegal in my state, you know, might lead a woman to feel like it's, you know, more of a bad choice than she would have thought before.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left, not even, and so we'll just kind of wind this down. But how about a quick comment on the heartbeat bills that are passing in different states?
Well, it's been really encouraging to see Florida take up the heartbeat because, you know, Ron DeSantis is running for president, and if he plays his cards right, this will give him the opportunity to explain, you know, this policy that is actually pretty broadly supported once people understand it. And we hear a lot of propaganda from the, you know, we hear again and again, oh, they're passing these 6-week abortion bans before most women even know they're pregnant. Well, I want your listeners to know that that's simply not true. If you look at the statistics on when women get abortions, the largest group of abortions, the largest chunk of them are those early abortions around 6 weeks. So, in fact, from 4 to 6 weeks, we're seeing a huge share of all abortions. So it's just false that nobody knows they're pregnant until after 6 weeks. We wouldn't see the abortions at 6 weeks that we see if that were true. So, in fact, 6 weeks is a pretty broad window for abortion. It's not where we want to land ultimately. We want to protect every child that we possibly can from abortion. But it does seem like a threshold that enjoys pretty broad support amongst the people, certainly in pro-life states like Florida has become.
Okay.
A great place to start.
Yeah. 20 seconds left for the whole discussion. Quick comment about chemical abortions.
Absolutely. Medical abortion, medication abortion, the abortion pill, it goes by a lot of names, RU46. More than half of abortions are by the abortion pill now. The Pro-Life Action League has a new flyer called The Abortion Pill, What You Need to Know. You can find it at prolifeaction.org to spread the truth about this horrific method of abortion that is, in fact, much less safe than surgical abortion, much more harmful.
Eric Scheidler, hey, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
God bless you.